And text 29 begins. My dear Vidura, after giving the king this advice, the priests who had been engaged, the advice is, anybody remember what the advice is? It's not. Yeah, they're going to bring Indra down, and what are they going to do? They're going to sacrifice him. Who is sacrifice himself, as it says. They're going to sacrifice Indra. So this is the advice that the priests gave to Indra. They're very powerful. They want to try it out. So, my dear Vidura, after giving the king this advice, the priests who had been engaged in performing the sacrifice called for Indra, the king of heaven, in a mood of great anger. So they chanted the mantras. When they were just ready to put the oblation in the fire, Lord Brahma appeared on the scene. I guess they were expecting Indra, so Brahma appeared and forbade them to start the sacrifice. Lord Brahma addressed them thus, "My dear sacrificial performers, you cannot kill Indra, the king of heaven. It is not your duty. You should know that Indra is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Indeed, he is one of the most powerful assistants of the Personality of Godhead. You are trying to satisfy all the demigods by the performance of this yajna. But you should know that all these demigods are but parts and parcels of Indra, the king of heaven. How then can you kill him in this great sacrifice?" So text 31. In order to make trouble and impede the performance of King Prithu's great sacrifice, King Indra has adopted some means that in the future will destroy the clear path of religious life. I draw your attention to this fact. If you oppose him any further, he will further misuse his power and introduce many other irreligious systems. So to text 32, today's text. Let there be only 99 sacrificial performances for Maharaj Prithu, Lord Brahma concluded. Lord Brahma then turned toward Maharaj Prithu and informed him that since he was thoroughly aware of the path of liberation, what was the use in performing more sacrifices? Srila Prabhupada's purport. Lord Brahma came down to pacify King Prithu regarding his continual performance of 100 sacrifices. King Prithu was determined to perform 100 sacrifices, and King Indra took this very seriously because Indra himself was known as the performer of 100 sacrifices. Just as it is the nature of all living entities within this material world to become envious of their competitors, King Indra, although king of heaven, was also envious of King Prithu and therefore wanted to stop him from performing 100 sacrifices. Actually, there was great competition. And King Indra, to satisfy his senses, began to invent so many irreligious systems to obstruct King Prithu. To stop these irreligious inventions, Lord Brahma personally appeared in the sacrificial arena. As far as Maharaj Prithu was concerned, he was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, it was not necessary for him to perform the prescribed Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. Such ceremonies are known as karma. And there is no need for a devotee in the transcendental position to execute them. As the ideal king, however, it was King Prithu's duty to perform sacrifices. A compromise was therefore to be worked out. By the blessings of Lord Brahma, King Prithu would become more famous than King Indra. Thus, Prithu's determination to perform 100 sacrifices was indirectly fulfilled by the blessings of Lord Brahma. Let there be only 99 sacrificial performances for Maharaj Prithu, Lord Brahma concluded. Lord Brahma then turned toward Maharaj Prithu and informed him that since he was thoroughly aware of the path of liberation, what was the use in performing more sacrifices? So this is his, Lord Brahma's solution to the problem. You can see, because of this material envy, how far Indra has gone already to throw confusion on the path of Dharma by inventing so many concocted forms of renounced life. Seems like Indra practically invented Mayavada sannyas. People who say, several times Prabhupada has quoted the text describing a Prashandi or an atheist is one who says that the demigods like Brahma and Shiva are on the same platform as Narayan. So this has been, these sorts of things were introduced by Indra himself. And apparently he was willing to go further. I guess what looked as though what Brahma had seen, that they were going to come down, call him down and try to chop off his head, but they wouldn't succeed. They couldn't kill Indra in this way. How could they? He's a Bhagavat Tanu. He says he's part of the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can you do this? Indra, another name of Indra is also Yajna, so how can you kill Yajna by means of Yajna, etc., etc.? So he can't do this. And somehow or other, it was going to just, he would find some way to thwart them and things would get even worse. In other words, Indra would not stop at anything. He was going to make sure that this sacrifice, Maharaj Prithu's sacrifice, was not completed. So Brahma wanted to put an end to this competition. So the renown, he says, Prithu Kirte Prithor Bhuyat, let there be wide renown for Maharaj Prithu. He gave him this benediction. He will achieve great renown. Eka Una Shatakratu, you performed one less than 100 sacrifices, 99 sacrifices. Indra Shatakratu. To Eka Una, Ekona Shatakratu, one less. But so by giving him this benediction of wide renown, that purpose will have been fulfilled. But the main thing is, he says, what's the use? There's nothing to be gained by this because you are Moksha Dharmavit. You are the knower of, Moksha Dharma. You know the path of religion, of liberation completely. So you're already beyond this sacrificial performances. So Prabhupada here in the purport, as far as Maharaj Prithu was concerned, he was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, it was not necessary for him to perform the prescribed Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. Such ceremonies are known as karma. And there's no need for a devotee in the transcendental position to execute them. So one thing. Then he says, as the ideal king, however, it was King Prithu's duty to perform sacrifices. On the one hand, no need. On the other hand, he had to. It was his duty. So this has to be understood. The sacrifices are known as karma. They're all part of the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas. And so this is something that it's necessary to be understood. What does it mean? This kind of simultaneous accepting and rejecting, the Karmakanda section of the Vedas. Because the idea of sacrifice the notion of Karmakanda is closely tied in with the notion of Varnashrama Dharma. And devotees sometimes find themselves in this peculiar position of, on the one hand, learning that we are how to be free from all bodily designations, and also having to adapt themselves to a whole new group of designations. This bewildered me when I was a new devotee. On the one hand, we're not this body. We keep hearing we're not this body. On the other hand, one becomes very much caught up in assuming a new identity as grihastha or brahmachari and so on. Now, on the one hand, we're not this body. On the other hand, it became a very, very important thing in ISKCON, sometimes of more overriding importance than practically anything else. At times, whether you were a grihastha or a brahmachari or a sannyas, or of course, so, and this whole new system of bodily identifications had to be learned. Plus, in theory anyway, this other system of bodily identification of Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Varnashram, Dharma. So why are we learning a whole new set of bodily designations while at the same time we're being told it's not this body? And, well, it's no longer confusing anymore, but at the same time, there's still a discussion is going on within the Hare Krishna movement about this topic, because we keep hearing that Prabhupada wanted Varnashrama Dharma implemented, and at the same time it said that devotees are transcendental, or supposed to be transcendental. So here the same thing is there. Maharaj Prithu: Moksha Dharma Vit, there was no need for him to perform Kratu sacrifices, but at the same time he had to do it because he was king. So this is described very, very nicely by Krishna in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and actually it seems to me a lot of argument would come to an end if one simply studies this. Of course, it's true. Here, Maharaj Prithu, he's a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so, Vedaischa Saravam Vedjo. I mean, by all the Vedas, they're just a searching after Krishna. So, he's achieved that purpose. What is the use of his performing sacrifices when he's achieved all the results of all the sacrifices? Of course, this was extreme. When Kapila was explaining to Devahuti about devotional service, she exclaimed, Aho Bhattasva Pachoto Gariyan, Yajiva Grevartate Nama Tubyan. How glorious is that person who, all born in a family of dog swapachaha, those who cook dogs, they serve up dog casserole, and roast dog, fried dog, gnawing on a dog leg. That's your family. That's where you come from. But she says, how glorious is such a person? Vedic culture, these are known as lowest grade of human beings, those who like a nice haunch of Collie or German Shepherd. This is the lowest grade of people, but how glorious that person who is always chanting your holy name. And then she says, te pus tapaste. That person must have performed all austerities and penances. Juhuvu must have performed all sacrifices. Sasnur must have bathed in all the holy places of pilgrimage. Arya must be endowed with all the good qualities of the Brahmanas, of the Aryans, rather. Brahmanuchuran must have thoroughly studied all the Vedic literature. Meaning that all the purposes of those things have been fulfilled by that. Even though this person is born in a family of dog-eaters, being born in a family of dog-eaters means that you have not done these things in your past life. Otherwise, how would you be born in a family of dog-eaters? But because somehow or other, by some good fortune, that person is chanting the holy name and has therefore come to the position of a devotee, then all those things must have been considered to have been accomplished already. All the purposes, Krishna says, of the small well can be served by the great reservoir of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served to one who knows, purpose behind them. So the same thing is being said here to Prithu Maharaj. So don't worry about it. What's the big problem? But still, he should perform this sacrifice. So of course, this is discussed in the third chapter. I just read this series of verses here. My dear Arjuna, one who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifice thus established by the Vedas certainly leads a life full of sin. Living only for the satisfaction of the senses, such a person lives in vain. Now these are sacrifices. They have to be performed. But then he says, but for one who takes pleasure in the self, the Sanskrit is atmarati, meaning the same thing as atmarama. So one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the self alone, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. That means no duty under Varnashram Dharma. The word for prescribed duty is simply karma. Karma means duties prescribed under Varnashram Dharma. For that person has no duties. A self-realized man has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duties, nor has he any reason not to perform such work, nor has he any need to depend on any living being. That is, he's totally transcendental. But, Krishna says, therefore, without being attached to the fruits of activities, one should act as a matter of duty. For by working without attachment, one attains the supreme. And Prabhupada says in the purport, Vedic rituals, like prescribed sacrifices, are performed for purification of impious activities that were performed in the field of sense gratification. So this has happened. While one is acting in the field of sense gratification, so many impious activities are there. So to counteract them, one has to perform prescribed duties and sacrifices, rituals and sacrifices. But action in Krishna consciousness is transcendental to the reactions of good or evil work. A Krishna conscious person has no attachment for the results, but acts on behalf of Krishna alone. So Krishna says this person, he acts, not that he doesn't act because he has no duty, but he acts without attachment to the fruits. That's his business. But nevertheless, he acts. And then he says, kings such as Janaka attain perfection solely by performance of prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work. And then he says, whatever actions a great person performs, yadya dacharati shreshta, that a common person follows. So that not everybody is on the transcendental path. So therefore, those who have transcended this Varnashram Dharma system. Still, they must uphold it, because otherwise, what will people do? And then Krishna goes on to discuss how he himself, certainly example of somebody who was never under the laws, he said he created this system, but he's the non-creator, the non-doer, being transcendental. He's not involved, implicated in it, although this Chaturvarnyam was created by him. So that's his position. So that's his instruction. So then later on in the same chapter, he returns to this. I want to read Prabhupada's purport, which seems to me to solve the whole question of Varnashrama Dharma and ISKCON. Krishna says it is, he's talking about Swadharma. It is far, far better to perform your Swadharma, your own individualized, personalized, prescribed duties. One's own dharma. It is far better to discharge your own prescribed duties, even though faultily, than those of another's, even though you've done them perfectly. Destruction in the course of performing one's own duty is better than engaging in another's duty. For performing one's path, is other's path, is dangerous. He's instructing Arjuna, you fight in this battle. That's your prescribed duty. You do this. Now, then Prabhupada talks about two kinds of prescribed duties. I'll just read the purport. One should therefore discharge his prescribed duties in full Krishna consciousness rather than those prescribed for others. Materially, prescribed duties are duties enjoined according to one's psychophysical condition. That's materially. And it's according to Varnashram Dharma. Under the spell of the modes of material nature, one psychophysical condition under the spell of the modes of material nature. Whether goodness, passion, or ignorance, or what mixture, that determines your prescribed duties. If you're in the mode of passion, you should act like this. If you're in the mode of goodness, you should act like this. If you're in a mixture of mode of passion and ignorance, like this, so on. So you know what you should be doing. Then spiritual duties are as ordered by the spiritual master for the transcendental service of Krishna. But whether material or spiritual, one should stick to his prescribed duties even up to death, rather than imitate another's prescribed duties. Duties on the spiritual platform and duties on the material platform may be different, but the principle of following the authorized direction is always good for the performer. Then he says this, when one is under the spell of the modes of material nature, one should follow the prescribed rules for his particular situation and should not imitate others. For example, a Brahmana who is in the mode of goodness is nonviolent, whereas a Kshatriya who is in the mode of passion is allowed to be violent. As such, for a Kshatriya it is better to be vanquished following the rules of violence and to imitate a Brahmana who follows the principles of nonviolence. Okay, then he says this, everyone has to cleanse his heart by a gradual process, not abruptly. So that's Varnashram Dharma. Everyone has to cleanse his heart by a gradual process, not abruptly. However, when one transcends the modes of material nature and is fully situated in Krishna consciousness, he can perform anything and everything under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master. In the complete stage of Krishna consciousness, the Kshatriya may act as Brahmana or Brahmana may act as a Kshatriya. In the transcendental stage, the distinctions of the material world do not apply. So notice the last three sentences, the beginning of them. However, when one transcends the modes of material nature and is fully situated in Krishna consciousness. Next sentence. In that complete stage of Krishna consciousness. Next sentence. In the transcendental stage. So each time he emphasizes this. That you, in other words, when can you be not according to Varnashram Dharma? When he says you are free from the, transcends the modes of material nature. Then, until that time, one is supposed to act according to Varnashram Dharma so one can cleanse one's heart by a gradual process, not abruptly. If you try to act on the transcendental platform, but you are not, you're inviting trouble. You are, in fact, violating the injunction in this verse that it is far better to perform your own prescribed duties, however faultily, than another's. Therefore, know thyself. One should know, or have others, or consult with others who can tell me what I should be doing. And don't try to act like a pure devotee unless one is free from the clutches of the modes of material nature. Now later on in the Bhagavad Gita, the symptoms of the modes of material nature are given quite clearly. The symptom of the mode of passion, for example, is sex desire. So when I'm free from sex desire, then I can contemplate acting outside of Varnashram Dharma. Until that time, I still know that there's some a tinge of the mode of passion. At least some tinge, and so one should be careful. This seems to me to pretty much clear up the... these instructions seem to be quite clear. How we should act in Krishna consciousness by cleansing the heart by a gradual process, but not abruptly. Not abruptly, he says. So for this reason, although... there was no reason for Maharaj Prithu, for his own necessity, to perform sacrifices because he was already moksha dharmavit and he was a great devotee of the Lord. That wasn't necessary for himself at all. But as a great king, just like Janaka and others, even though in the liberated position, he performed the sacrifices. It was his duty to perform sacrifices because Krishna wants this system of sacrifice maintained. He wants Varnashram Dharma maintained because otherwise it will not be possible for people to make spiritual progress. Unless they follow the rules, and if they're going to be engaged in sense gratification, then to whatever degree, then they have to do so under rules and regulations. And then gradually, there can be one can become transcendental. So therefore, King Prithu was engaged in sacrifice, as is appropriate for a king to do so. Even though moksha dharma vit, he was fully self-realized. So anyway, this is Brahma's solution. You don't have to be so intent upon performing 100 sacrifices. Your name will be glorified anyway. You're simply provoking Indra to perform more and more heinous acts. So, lay off. All this competition on the fruit of platform is simply causing trouble, and you don't need it anyway. That's his advice. So, any questions or comments about this? Yes.
At the same time, you mentioned how
Well, he has got a position. He's called here Yajna, because he's the recipient of sacrifices. And when they offer oblations in the fire, they say Idam Indra Namaha. You know, this is for Indra. So when sacrifices are offered to the demigods, they stand. They're stand-ins for Krishna. They're stand-ins for Krishna. And this is also explained by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, that actually sacrifice is meant for Vishnu alone. But for those people who can't come to the platform, they're allowed to perform the sacrifice to the different demigods. And they worship the demigods in that way. But actually, they're worshipping Vishnu, although it is avidhi purvakam, it is in an incorrect way, he said. But anyway, that he's allowed to stand in this way, for. So that same sacrifice, this is also interesting, this is described in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Sacrifice is taught in the third chapter, about sacrifice, and then it's returned to again in the fourth chapter about transcendental knowledge. And Prabhupada, in a purport, talks about the mystery of sacrifice, and he says very, very interesting what he says. In text 33, Krishna says that there's two kinds of sacrifices. There's a sacrifice of material possession, and then there's sacrifice in pursuit of transcendental knowledge. People may sacrifice material possessions to the demigods for various fruitive ends. And then there's also a performed in transcendental in knowledge is better than mere sacrifice of material possessions. After all, O son of Pritha, all sacrifices of work culminate in transcendental knowledge. So then Prabhupada says in the purport, he says, the purpose of all sacrifices is to arrive at the status of complete knowledge, then to gain release from material miseries, and ultimately to engage in the loving transcendental service to the Supreme Lord, Krishna consciousness. Nonetheless, there is a mystery about all these different activities of sacrifice, and one should know this mystery. So he said there's something very mysterious going on, and then he describes it. Sacrifices sometimes take different forms according to the particular faith of the performer. When one's faith reaches the stage of transcendental knowledge, the performer of sacrifice should be considered more advanced than those who simply sacrifice material possessions without such knowledge. For without attainment of knowledge, sacrifice remains on the material platform and bestow no spiritual benefit. In other words, the same sacrifice, the same activity, the same kratu, the same performance, is different according to the development of faith of the performer of the sacrifice. I can say Idam Indre Namaha, this is for Indra, thinking just of Indra, or I can make the same thing thinking of Indra, who is receiving this on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That sacrifice can be performed either in ignorance or in knowledge. Same sacrifice. That's the mystery, he says. He says, real knowledge culminates in Krishna consciousness, the highest stage of transcendental knowledge. Without the elevation of knowledge, sacrifices are simply material activities. When, however, they are elevated to the level of transcendental knowledge, all such activities enter onto the spiritual platform. Same activity. Depending on differences in consciousness, so here again he sums it up, sacrificial activities are sometimes called karmakanda, fruit of activities, and sometimes jnanakanda, knowledge in the pursuit of truth. It is better when the end is knowledge. So the same sacrifice can be karmakanda, jnanakanda, depending on your elevation. So, when a person can sacrifice to Indra and actually mean Krishna, he sees Indra as Bhagavat Tanu, one of the parts and parcels of Krishna, feeding him this way, serving Krishna in this way, through Indra, through Agni, and so on, because he actually understands that Krishna is Yajnapati. He's Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam, he's the enjoyer of all sacrifices and austerities. So this is Indra's position. He's empowered in the arena of fruitive activities to receive sacrifices. He's supposed to do that on behalf of the Lord, but he's not a pure devotee at the same time. So this is simply the peculiar arrangement of the karmakanda division of things, that Indra can do this. But at the same time, he's not really, he's empowered to do that. But at the same time, he's not a pure devotee. So for the purposes of sacrifice, he's as good as Indra. And you become an atheist if you think that Indra, or the name of Indra is either equal to the name of Krishna or is independent of it. But if you understand Indra in his right place, then you're okay. All right?
Or couldn't Indra just announce it or something? You know, outdo or something? But if you do 100, then 100 or 200, this is so wrong.
I don't know. It's not stated anywhere why he... Instead he thought to stop him. I guess he thought that was an easier course, huh? Cheaper. Yes, Prabhu? Any of those.
So we can't actually claim
it. Vaishnava is a very, very elevated thing. It's not so easy. It's not so easy. They asked this question to Prabhupada when he was talking about Varnashram Dharma. Well, Prabhupada, aren't we Vaishnavas? Prabhupada said, if they are Vaishnavas, why are they falling down? That seems to indicate that Vaishnava means not fall down. So it's a great courtesy
that Prabhupada extends to us the word Vaishnava. We should try very, very hard to live up to this very elevated title, better than a Brahmana. Yeah. Yeah, call yourself Vaishnava means I'm a servant of Vaishnava. That's a... Be that. Is there other question or comment? Yeah. That's what he said. So this, you know, I say, well, I'm a Vaishnava, transcendental the modes of material nature. Are you? Prabhu? Krishnaku? Good considerations. That's an interesting prospect. I would have depend upon the individual person, and in that case one should have friends with whom one can consult and confide in and come to the best solution to the problem, because that would be a problem. We should anticipate this problem coming up and be sure that we're pretty advanced by the time we're 50 years old, huh? Yes? Understanding is that we're bringing in the Vedic culture in a certain way. In one way, we're giving the opportunity for everybody to become Vaishnava so that they can all take sannyas. So this is not caste Brahmanism or caste Hinduism that we're bringing in. We'll have to see how it works out. Although the Kshatriyas wouldn't take formal sannyas, they left home. They went to the forest also. They retired. So not just Brahmins, also Kshatriyas. But every person is supposed to become perfect, according to Bhagavad Gita, by doing his own work. So that means that everyone actually should be able to do that. But, if it depends. If they're devotees and they're acting in that position, if they can take up full Krishna consciousness, yes. If they're not, then some other consideration has to be there. But everybody should try for it. Everybody should try for it. Prabhu? Every time there's... Yeah, if you're not ready for it, abrupt renunciation that you're not ready for, that's already stated. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is quite clear about that. That one should not be renounced while he's still attached to sense objects. And then you just create havoc in the renounced order of life. So we say gradually, not abruptly. So one has to wean oneself away. If you haven't developed a higher taste, then the taste for sense objects is going to remain, and then you create havoc. So that taste has to develop. So as you increase your attachment to Krishna, you decrease. Now, if you can surrender completely to Krishna, then you can become fully Krishna conscious in an instant. But if you can't fully surrender to Krishna, then don't pretend to be fully surrendered, but start working toward that goal. Right? Yes, Ru?
You know that certain things are prohibited in Kali Yuga, so of course they must be one of those.
Right.
Things. But we also know that, as Rosh Chakotu was saying, there's a philosophy that one should strive to take that.
Mm-hmm. Applies to Mayavadis. Prabhupada's pretty clear about that. That it's meant for Mayavadis. Because in the Kali Yuga, Mayavadi sannyas, because there is no transcendental engagement, one has to be a super rigorous and rigid person and withdrawn from worldly life in a very, very hard and firm way. That's not possible unless there is seen param drishtavanyava, unless you have developed a higher taste. So therefore Lord Chaitanya, because Vaishnavism is so powerful, it's allowed for Vaishnavas. But still be careful. Yes, Prabhu? Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. What did you say about? Was how old? 90. Yeah. So, it's not really. Prabhupada emphasizes 50, so that should be a goal you should shoot at. But it isn't really. There's some time, and also before that, there's vanaprastha, so that can be long or short as needed. But one should definitely move toward more and more renounced position. As you get older, you get more renounced anyway. Everybody you know starts to die off. Your teeth, you renounce your teeth. So renunciation is obligatory, one way or the other. You renounce your hair, you renounce your teeth, and so on. So, I'll stop there. Glory Srila Prabhupada.